This is John McMurray with the Society for American Baseball Research, and I'm speaking on July the 3rd, 2019 with Mike Fetters, a longtime major league pitcher. And Mike, tell me what got you interested in baseball. Growing up in Hawaii is not a natural fit.
No, well, I'm the youngest of five boys, so all my older brothers all played all sports like myself. I played them all. And since you played them all, I guess I ended up being the best at baseball, so baseball pretty much found me.
At what point did you think that you might have major league potential?
Never knew that I did until I got to the big leagues and knew that I could stick there if I did what I was supposed to do. But to be honest with you, as a little boy, probably about 10 years old, I used to write papers in school and tell my mom and dad I'm going to be a professional athlete. Didn't know which sport, but I said it since I was 10. So from that age, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I strived to be, an athlete, a professional athlete of some sort, and it ended up being baseball. But to be a major leaguer, when did I know? I had no idea that I could be a major leaguer until I got here.
You came up at the right time, only because relief pitching was changing so much. I mean, if you had come in 30 years earlier, it would have been very different.
Right, but like all of us, most relievers are field starters. So I was a starter my whole career until I got to the major leagues. I became a reliever and did a pretty good job, so I got to hang around for a while.
Now, you played for a number of teams, started with the Angels. Tell me about your major league debut.
Man, it's so long ago, but I remember it was in Yankee Stadium. I know it was against the Yankees. I got in the game, and I believe it was a bases loaded, nobody out situation. I believe it was Steve Balboni to line out to the shortstop. We doubled the guy off second, and then I struck out. I might have been Rich Guerin. I walked off the field thinking the big leagues is nothing. I went out in the next scene. I gave up a leadoff homer to Randy Velarde, and the rest was not good.
Now, you pitched in both the American League and the National League. Do you have a particular preference?
No, I don't. I think any hitter that comes to the plate, you got to get him out. It doesn't matter the league. I think that the games are different. They're definitely different American National League, but I think as a pitcher, your job is to get outs. That's it. It doesn't matter.
So tell me about this. You're famous for your 90-degree head turn some people have tried to mimic or in some cases kind of tease you with. What was the origination of that?
As I got old, later in my career, I had exercise-induced asthma, and finding ways that you can't breathe, to control your breathing. So a lady by the name of Lori Merrick, who was my massage therapist, my physical trainer, almost like a sports psychologist, was teaching me how to breathe, how to focus, how to concentrate on one pitch at a time. It kind of what turned into learning how to focus, concentrate, turned into kind of a routine. And at that point, I was too old to be too cool, so it didn't really matter to me what I did. I didn't care what people thought. And I'll tell you this, it maybe put probably 4 or 5 years on my career because it helped me focus and concentrate and helped me control my breathing more than anything.
So it wasn't an issue of nervousness?
No, not at all.
Because I've read at some places, but it was more an issue of just
controlling my breathing right. And the other thing is people say, oh, you're trying to intimidate. You don't intimidate big league hitters unless you throw in, right? So there wasn't an intimidation factor at all. And in fact, the guys who tried to mimic me at the plate, copying from the plate, I knew they were out because they weren't
Craig
focused
Biggio
on their job.
Did that, for instance.
Biggio did it. Brent Brown did it. I mean, a few guys have done it, did it over the years. So
how did you take that when others...
They're paying attention. They're actually paying attention to Mike Fetters. That's kind of weird, right? Because, like you said, the day of the reliever is a little bit different. They're like, no one knows who you are. So you came out in the game and got them out, right? So to know that they were doing that made me feel like, okay, these guys are paying attention to what I'm doing.
1996, you had the 32 saves. What was different about that year?
More opportunities. I became a closer by default. By no means did I have closer stuff. Our closers struggled. They needed someone to take the ball. I took the ball and I evolved into the closer. But I always knew that my best position was the setup guy. But I also knew I could get outs as a closer if they needed to. So I think that's what kept me around long enough for the period of time that I did, was because I could do both roles.
Now, we hear a lot about the mentality that closers have to have, that they have to be able to zero in and get those three outs. Is that really true?
It's the hardest three outs in the game to get because you want either the hero or the goat, right? On both sides, offense or defense, right? So it is, to me, is the most difficult. And some people think just anybody can do it, but I don't believe so. You have to have a certain mindset and temperament to be able to get that job done. I say that, but there's guys that do it different ways. There's guys that are hair on fire like me, and guys that are gunslingers that are super cool and calm. And but those three outs, I mean, it is guys that have short memories, they don't dwell on the negative, and guys that will take the ball every day.
So if you have a bad game, how do you get over it for the next day?
You learn from what the mistakes you made and know that you can't do them again, and you get on to the next game, and you got to block it out. However you have to block it out, you block it out. And for me, it was just keep it very simple. It was one pitch at a time, one batter at a time, and you forget about what you did yesterday and the day before.
Tell me about your approach to someone like Barry Bonds or Alex Rodriguez. Or both.
Oh, it's a hard question because early in A-Rod's career, I could knock the bat out of his hands. He was an out. And about 3 years later, you try to do the same thing. He's hitting the ball 500 feet. So the approach to A-Rod for me changed. I went from, here it is, kid, I dare you, to, okay, I got to be careful. I got to try to trick him a little bit. I have to throw balls out of the zone to get him out, because he was crushing every ball in the zone as he got older and older and became a bona fide veteran. Barry Bonds, his strike zone was about the size of a baseball. He wasn't going to swing unless it was a strike. Probably the most feared hitter of all the, my generation, my era. And again, it was my mentality was I'm gonna give everybody a pitch to hit. If they missed it, too bad. And same with Barry, I'm gonna throw him something to hit. And if he didn't get it, sorry. But he was different. He was a different animal. I don't care what anyone says about the steroid era or whatever. The dude was special. He was the best baseball player I ever got on the field and played against ever. And probably the best player I've ever seen with my own eyes. And there's a lot of good ones that when I was a little kid, but, man, there's no one like Barry.
It seems like you just couldn't get a pitch past Barry.
No. This is what's amazing about Barry. I don't know if people, not enough people talk about it. Barry Bonds gets four at-bats in a game. Well, four plate appearances. You potentially walk him three times, which is true. He gets one at-bat, and he didn't miss. He threw a strike, he either hit a homer or hit it off the wall. That's amazing. I mean, who does that? Whoever did that? Only him, you know, and he was special that way. So, I mean, I got nothing but great things and respect for that guy. You know, even though he's never hit a homer off me, man, it was not fun facing Barry Bonds because you know the strike zone was small. You know he wasn't swinging at stuff off the zone. He had a great strike zone, had a good eye, and you had to make good pitches to try to get him out.
As a pitcher, you can't afford just to not be aggressive and just sort of throw it slightly off the plate. You'll get in trouble that way.
Right. My approach was, let me throw the ball down the middle because I was a sinker ball pitcher and hope he tops one and grounds out the second baseman. That's all I did. Here it is. Let me see. Hit it in the ground. You know, I wanted to see how many balls he got off his front foot, you know, swinging on a sinker and grounded and hit his foot, maybe come out of the game, but never happened. But that was my approach to Barry, was let me throw some sinkers and hopefully he mishits one.
You mentioned about being a setup guy would be your ideal role. Why is that, and what goes into being a good setup guy?
Because I'm was a ground ball pitcher, guys on base, I was able to get ground ball double plays. I could throw every day. I could throw multiple innings. I wasn't just a one-inning guy. And I knew that... I mean, my three outs were just as important as a closer, as a setup guy, but my job was to get it to that guy. And I felt confident that I could get the ball to our closer every night.
You pitched a lot, 620 games.
That's a lot, yeah.
It's a lot. And with eight different teams, what is the key to your longevity, and how do you stick with it? Because all those moves have to be difficult.
I think it's like everything else. Hard work keeps you there.
Nice.
Learning yourself, knowing who you are truly. Being a true evaluator of what you are and what you have and not trying to be something that you're not was key to me. I knew I wasn't overpowering. I wasn't throwing 100. I was 92, 93 with sync, and I stuck with it. I had a process, what I called my pitching plan that I pitched with from 1992 till I retired in 04. And it didn't work all the time, but it worked more times than not because it was almost like a routine, and I practiced it every single day. So I think that's what kept me around, because I was able to work my routine every night.
Now, you've said before that being in the right place at the right time is very important in baseball, and you've worked for Kevin Towers, and now tell me how that happened and how you got... Hi. And how you got to work for... how you got to your current position.
Okay, well, I got back with the organization as a part-time radio broadcaster, and then I did some part-time pre- and post-game with Fox. And Derek Hall, who's the president, got me back in it. And then when Derek said that Kevin Towers was the GM, I asked if I could interview with him because I wanted to learn about the front office. I wanted to see what it was like, see if it was something I'd be interested in. So I met with Kevin. I've known him in the past, just in passing as a player, seen him on the field. Hey, Kevin, how's it going? Hey, Mike. He knew everybody. By the way, he's the greatest boss you'd ever have, man. God bless him. I know he's not with us anymore, but, man, what an awesome dude he was. Anyway, back to the question. I met with him. He said, come to spring training. We want you to suit up in spring training. We want you to work on guys' pickoff moves. I guess my third to first move was pretty special back in the day. It's outlawed now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, can't use it now. But so he goes, by the end of spring, we'll figure something out if it's even possible. So it was the last couple of days of spring training. So I walked in, hey, man, what are we going to do? Are you going to have me on board? He goes, let's do this. I'm bringing on board as a special assistant, and we'll take off from there. After about the third year, it was like, oh, man, this isn't for me. So they got me on the field as a quality control coach. And then I've been there since. And then, well, I was there since. And then once these guys took over, they wanted to use that role for something different. So they asked me if I wanted to interview for the bullpen job. I did the interview. They hired me, and I've been the bullpen coach for the last 3 years.
What does a bullpen coach do that a pitching coach does not do?
Well, we're so far away, I help them go over the scouting reports. You know, it's long laps between when you leave the clubhouse and when they finally get in the game. So I go over scouting reports. We talk about mechanics. We talk about who's hot, who's not. when they get ready, making sure they're mechanically correct, and something might fall apart that I see and correcting before they get out there. When you're basically a pitching coach, but out there, and you're not quite as important as the guy in here because he's got to make decisions and I don't, you know. But I'm still there for those guys, whatever they need, mechanically, mentally, part of the game plan, part of all that stuff is what I do.
How much does analytics play into what you do?
It's huge. It's part of the game, and it ain't going anywhere. So if you don't learn it, don't know the language, you're not going to be around. And there's a room for it. There's a place for it. So the guys that think that it's not something that's important, it really is. I wish they had it back when I was. Well, obviously they did, but they didn't have it to the extent they have now. And if only I had that information when I was playing, man, it might have been a little bit different. Might still be playing.
You've been around the game 30 years. What stands out to you as a highlight of your career?
Playing right here at Dodger Stadium, to be honest. I grew up a Dodger fan. Mm-hmm. So to wear a Dodger uniform was amazing. And my first spring training trying to make the club, I was a free agent. My first bullpen, Sandy Koufax, stood back there and watched my entire bullpen. I was more nervous than in my major league debut.
What's Sandy like?
Very calm. He was a coach. I mean, he wasn't a coach there, but he acted as if a coach. He sat and talked
about spring training.
He kind of let me know what he felt about my stuff. And of course, he's going to tell you he was impressed. And I know Sandy Koufax, but made me feel really comfortable that, I got Sandy's approval. I'm all right.
When you work with guys today, are they that different than when you played?
I'm not so sure they're different. I think that the mentality is different. I'll go ahead and cut to the chase. I think back then you had to really be a man to play a kid's game. Mm-hmm. And it was really physical. Guys were getting hit. Guys were getting taken on the bases. Catchers were getting run over. Guys were getting cleaned out of second base. You hit a guy, they take their base. You were taught to pitch in. Nowadays, these guys, it's not physical. You can't take a catcher out. You can't go spikes high on second base. You hit guys, everyone takes it personal. So I think you had to be a man to play then. Now you just have to have skill. But they're way more skilled than we ever were. But I think there's a certain toughness that came with being a baseball player back in the day.
Last question. When you retire from the game, what did you miss the most?
When I retired, my teammates and the competition of trying to win a World Series. Mm-hmm. Teammates, because that's, you're here every day with these guys, their family. You're with them more than you are with your family throughout the year. And you're all here for the same goal and the same purpose, is to win a World Series. I still don't have one. That's why I'm still around. I need to get me a World Series. It may not be for everybody, and I hope I'm not that guy, but I'm still hoping.
Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us for our oral history interview today.
Thank you for having me. Okay. All right.